You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our fandom is so toxic, we shut down Cheesecake Factory. I'm your host, Justin M. Wozdeski, and if you were one of the fans, one of the midsiders that joined us at the first ever midside meetup, where we indeed did stay in Cheesecake Factory so late, even the wait staff had gone home, thank you. I had a great time. It was great meeting you all and just sharing our common understanding and our common joy of being in the midside. And joining us this trip back into the midside from our nation's capital, and probably the last time we're going to hear his voice in a while because his wife is about to give birth, Daniel T. Richards.
So at the midside meetup at the Cheesecake Factory, you all shared one chicken Bellagio and still took some home.
Now. I mean, I know there's the portions at Cheesecake Factory are very large, but we all had separate plates. Daniel.
I don't think they're legally allowed to refer to them as portions. I think at this point they have to talk about them in tonnage.
We did, though, basically share one piece of cheesecake, and then I took the rest of it home. That's how big the piece of cheesecake was.
Yeah, that's a wheel of cheesecake, you might say.
Yeah. Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello. How's everything going? I've found a new excuse for not going to the gym. The Guardian has reported a feminist has decided to stop going to the gym because of Donald Trump. So I'm going to, in solidarity, continue to not go to the gym.
Also, stop stealing my stories for Woke or Joke. Every time I open up Discord now, it's like, oh, strike that story. Jerk.
At least we finally got you in Discord.
Yeah. I'm an old man. I don't know how things work, and I don't want to learn.
Yeah, he's still hunt and peck typing, so it's one
just
step
because
at a time.
I do digital strategy for a living doesn't mean I care about your, what is this, chat room? Is this the 90s?
It's the toxic fandom of Gamergate. They're still in the 90s where white men were supreme.
That's right.
No, I want to be clear about that article, though, William, the gym article. She's not doing it to, like, sabotage herself because the world's so terrible. She's trying to prove Trump is immoral again by showing that his gym routine doesn't work. That's the intent.
But the headline was something like, I stopped going to the gym because of Trump, and now I can't open jars.
That paragraph where she says that she can't open jars is hilarious.
On the counter. Yeah. If you really want it open.
Well, she can't lift it.
I mean, that's some reference to the idea that women need men to open jars, I assume. It has to be, right?
It's got to be the last thing that men are allowed to do is to open jars for women, but I think even that soon that will be relegated to trans women only.
Yeah, that's right. There'll be an app.
All right, we're going to move on to the news here, but I just want to say there's a difference between healthy and fit. Donald Trump may be healthy, but he is not fit. He may go to the doctor and the doctor may say, you are healthy, but Donald Trump is not fit. So you would not use him as an example of how to work out at the gym. I swear to God, Daniel, 99% of these problems that these articles have and point out could just be solved by listening to the Adam Carolla show or to the Adam and Dr. Drew show.
Yeah, let's plug for those shows.
Let's plug for our own shows and enjoy the last few moments we have of you. Let's go into the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't
isn't just a fad. For my last news segment for a while, of course, Justin wants me to lead off with a story that will make me sound whiter than Donald Trump. Speaking of, Pusha T, I don't know who that is, but his name sounds like a slur. Pusha T says Trump MAGA hats are this generation's Ku Klux Klan hoods. Not as form-fitting. Anyway, Pusha T has taken aim at Donald Trump's Make America Great Again hats, declaring in a new interview that they are this generation's Ku Klux Klan hoods. The former Clips rapper's comments are somewhat peculiar given his close relationship with good music label head Kanye West, who's been pictured sporting a MAGA hat after vocally praising Donald Trump in recent months. Speaking about West's endorsement of Trump, Pusha, here dropping the T, admits that he and Yeezy, quote, disagree on plenty of shite, including the controversial comments West made about slavery on a TMZ episode. I believe that was in reference to Kanye West saying that slavery was a choice. Quote, well, when he did TMZ, I flew to Wyoming the next day to confront him, Pusha told The Guardian. We spoke about insensitivity, the actual messaging, where I felt he went wrong. You can't even paraphrase about situations and issues that are so personal to people. When it comes to death and real-life people and persecution and things where families have been divided, you have to be more careful. Justin, do the hats come with their very own tiki torches?
That was the impression I was under. I mean, wasn't that the article from that thing that happened in Virginia? Where did that happen in Virginia?
Charlottesville.
Yeah, Charlottesville. Wasn't that the article there that basically the J. Crew fashion with tiki torches? I mean, basically, if you dress like Jeff Probst from Survivor, you're a Donald Trump supporter and racist.
Tiki torch? Let's get that red hat on him.
Daniel,
what?
You are more white than Trump, though, because he's orange.
True. It's true. I forgot about that. Yeah, I don't get it. If these were the new hood, KKK hoods, I mean, as I've said before in the show, then Trump is a terrible racist. Like, he's just really bad at it. If it's true, because black unemployment is an all-time low, Hispanic unemployment just hit a historic low, the economy is better off for all sorts of minority groups, violent crime is down, etc. So, worst racist ever.
Daniel, it's just an example of how Trump has been built up into this image as to what other than what he is. This idea that you would compare people wearing these hats to people who legitimately lynched people due to their race, who legitimately created a hate group based on their race, is just so disconnected from reality. And that's the scary thing to me. They're so disconnected from reality that me even making these statements right now runs the risk of people misconstruing what I'm saying and misperceiving what I'm saying as if I am a Trump supporter and if I am racist. That's how disconnected from reality people who say these kind of things are. And that's what's scary to me about this country right now, about the politics and the culture of this country, and why I personally have pulled back from voting and getting involved with this kind of stuff. With these things, with these discussions, because to me, there's no point in having them because there's an irony, right? In this article, he talks about, oh, well, the nuance of what Kanye West said was missed. Aren't you the one that's causing all the nuance to be missed when you make statements like this? You're the one doing that. Talk about lack of nuance. There's a Panama Canal between, there's an Atlantic Ocean. Now that's going to come across as racist. There's an Atlantic Ocean between the Ku Klux Klan and Making America Great Again. And the hats. And he's acting like they're the same thing. So no wonder people can't understand nuance. We see no difference between legitimate racist hate groups who commit murder and people who voted for someone for president of the United States and support him.
William, if MAGA hats are the new Ku Klux Klan hoods, what are the new cross burnings?
Words, words, words. I mean, we've talked about this on the show before, and this story has both those themes. It has the idea of tribalism, where we just judge everyone by, if one person holds an extreme view that wears a hat, then everyone in that wears a hat supports that. So we just complete tribalism. And then we also have that the idea that words equal actions. And we see this all over the place. So connected to other stories, you know, we've got this tremendous amount of emotionalism over the border enforcement right now, where everyone's comparing it to concentration camps. And I think there's a lot more food and, you know, blankets at the border where people are being kept than there were in the concentration camps. I mean, I don't know, I wasn't there, but from the people who were there, that's what they say. And it's to me, that's the more interesting thing, is like, are people really buying this, or is this just going to reelect Trump? Like, this is another in what I think is another push to reelect Trump when he says something like this, when Pusha Trump is actually saying MAGA hats look like the Ku Klux Klan. That's just going to draw more support to Trump.
I think you have to think about this cosmically a little bit. And what I mean is, if the left were to have some modicum of intellectual honesty, and you were to examine the statement, "Make America Great Again hats are this generation's Ku Klux Klan hoods," how much less harmful, how much less abhorrent, etc., has quote-unquote racism gotten, if that is the case? If we're not talking about, as Justin mentioned, lynchings, we're not talking about literally murdering people, we're not talking about burning crosses on people's lawns, we're talking about a difference in public policy positions, some of which you don't like, and that's racism today. I mean, think about that in historical context. That's ridiculous. So, one, I don't think it is racism, but two, it's even bizarre to me to put it in the same genre of thing as what the Ku Klux Klan was doing. So, I don't know. It's all stupid.
Daniel, you have to look at the end of this article to understand what is really going on. To me, Pusha T is someone who he's a true believer. Right. Remember, we always have this discussion of, is this person one of these people who's manipulating to get power because they know they can't get it any other way? Or are they true believers? Pusha T is a true believer. And what I mean about that is, at the end of the article, he says, and you can look up the exact quote, but he says, "When was America great anyways?"
Yeah, and when name, you talk name about that time period, he says. Yeah,
right. Exactly. And it's exactly what you just said. They are seeing, you're saying there's a big difference. In reality, there is a big difference between the things you just mentioned, the lynching, the murders, and what they are seeing is institutionalized racism, right? White privilege and all of those things. To them, there is no difference between those two things, which means America was never great. Now, there's a large swath of people who are saying that just to get power, because they're using that to get people on their side and convince them we can help them. Oh, we can help you. Vote for us. Blah, blah, blah. But then there are true believers who swallow this and buy this. And when you look at the difference between a Pusha T and a Kanye, for all of Kanye's faults, he's starting to see that as he becomes independently wealthy and he becomes self-efficacious, if that's a word. The word I'm trying to think of is, he can take care of himself. He doesn't need anyone to take care of him. He's starting to see the reality of what it means to take care of yourself and all the lies. Whereas Pusha T has bought into this idea that the entire system is fucked up from the beginning. So basically, he's buying into the idea that no society in world history has ever been great.
Is there an alternative universe where there's a Pusha C talking about how Hillary Clinton hates men?
I seriously doubt that. I mean, I'd like to.
You're actually
to
entertaining
believe that.
My concept of a parallel universe. You didn't have to. You could just go wah-wah and then move on.
But
set you up sometimes.
A parallel universe.
I set you up sometimes just to, like, show your alpha dominance on the show. Just be like, that was a terrible joke, let's move on. And you fail me like 66% of the time. It's really sad.
Well,
worst alpha ever.
You bring up a parallel universe. What do you want to, me to do? Like, you're like, hey, Justin, here's some catnip. And you, like, wave it in front of my face. Like,
that's right.
Well, the only thing worse is if it could have been a parallel universe where Zack Snyder and Tom Brady are running on a ticket for president and vice president.
That's not a parallel universe, my friend. That is 2024 right there. All right. Well, speaking of Pusha T and Cardi B and other rappers, I have no idea. Let's move on from that entirely and talk about something I do know about, which is Star Wars. But we get into some craziness here, too. Opinion. This is from Sci-Fi Wire. I didn't know Sci-Fi wrote content. It's weird. Opinion. Why Christopher McQuarrie swearing off Star Wars might actually be a good thing? Well, if you didn't hear about this, don't worry. No one else has either. But this is the story. Chris McQuarrie, who is a director, and he's done such astonishing things as The Way of the Gun, Jack Reacher, and Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, so gear up here, was on Twitter, mistake number one, and he was getting involved in a discussion about the new Star Wars, and he was citing Rod Serling and The Twilight Zone as the sort of this, the pinnacle of folding in social commentary into genre stories. And talking, relating it to Rian Johnson and Star Wars and whatever. Anyway, someone replied, citing that Sterling was an example of what happens when you don't let social justice warrior nonsense impact fiction. To which Christopher McQuarrie replied, "My friend, after 5 minutes of this, I don't know why you're still on Twitter." He's replying to Rian Johnson. And he continues, "I would love to make a Star Wars film someday. I'm cured." So, this article goes on to say, essentially, that Star Wars lost a potential great director of one of its movies in Chris McQuarrie, and it's all because of toxic fandom and how awful it is. And this is sort of the kicker of the article, getting to it. "There's a chance of a cold glass of water to the face moment here." This is a quote from the article. "Of the realization that elements of fan culture are helping destroy what they profess to love. The chances of it happening aren't high, but hey, I'm a professional optimist. It'd be great to think that frightening off a white dude would cause people to examine their behavior. They haven't with anything or anyone else, but like the song goes, everyone's got to learn sometime." "Because if Chris McQuarrie, a default safe pair of hands, doesn't want to go anywhere near Star Wars, imagine what female directors must feel like, or directors of color, or directors of the LGBTQ spectrum. A white guy and a white guy perfectly equipped to deliver a kick-ass Star Wars movie wants no part of the franchise, so why should they when every obstacle they face will be higher, every fight more venomous and more targeted? Where's their new hope? Where's their rebellion? Where's their Death Star moment?" Wow, the writing in this. It's not here yet, but perhaps this is the first indication it's on its way. Justin, how about you? Would you direct a Star Wars movie?
Really? Really? Me? Me? Do you want me to? I mean, if you're going to hand me the keys to the franchise, like, yeah, sure. I mean,
here, take this for a spin.
If only for the money. Like, can you imagine? Let's see. First thing I would do if I directed Star Wars.
The Last Jedi was a dream by Rey and meant nothing in the actual universe.
No, I think I'd double down on that, actually. I think I'd just double down on The Last Jedi. And just the whole movie would be Rey killing all the men because her mother was abandoned by her father after a one-night stand. I think that's what I would make the whole thing. And Rey would actually turn evil and ally with Kylo Ren if I was going to write the story.
And
all
just,
because her father.
And you'd just rename it Social Justice Wars.
Yes. Yeah. No, but the first thing I would do, the first scene in that movie of Star Wars toxic masculinity, which would be the end of the trilogy, the first scene would just be C-3PO getting destroyed. He'd walk in and he'd be like, "Boop, boop, here's my pseudo-witty comment, ha ha, isn't it funny, the sky is falling." And then like a giant like boot, like Monty Python, would come down and crush him.
Well, that's postmodern.
Hey, if you're going to hand me the keys to Star Wars and it's already going down the drain, like, I'm going to help it.
Might as well hold that flush, that lever down. Yeah.
No, look, at this point for me, Star Wars is like, so the Star Wars is like that real, for, this is for me. Now, don't get mad, Star Wars fans out there. But for me, Star Wars is like that really ugly girl who was ugly in high school. And then in college, she started to get hot, and you were like, okay, good. You're turning your life around. This is nice for you. Good job. And then, like, junior year, she's like, yeah, you know what? Fuck it. And she gets even worse than she was before. And you're like, why would you do that? That's what Star Wars is like to me right now. So,
anyway. Just like that.
Anyway, since you asked, Christopher McQuarrie is actually known for directing for writing The Usual Suspects. That's where he got his big break.
Oh, that was fine.
Yeah, but that's why he's famous and considered awesome, because of the twist in that movie, right? Because no one saw that coming, and it was heralded as a great movie. So that's where his fame came from. As far as the content of this article goes, to me, this is definitional gaslighting. This is a prime example. We've talked about it before. The left gaslighting. The idea that, oh, maybe people are mad at us about what we're doing to their beloved property, but the problem is theirs. The problem is theirs. They go, oh, when are they going to wake up and see reality? Oh, that this toxic fandom is the one that's destroying this. They do the same thing the Batman versus Superman fans on Twitter, right? Now, don't get me wrong. People know I have problems with them and the way they go about it. But part of the reason they're so fucking obnoxious is if you say anything positive about Batman versus Superman or Man of Steel on Twitter, people go after you. Or my favorite is the movie came out like, what, 3 years ago at this point? And still people will randomly tweet about how bad Batman versus Superman is. Because it becomes virtue signaling to say these things that are supposedly true. I mean, when I watch an MTV reality show and one of the characters goes, oh man, this was as bad as Ben Affleck as Batman. Really? Really? It's become that accepted in the culture? And that's what's happened with Star Wars right now. They're trying to make it so it's acceptable to say that The Last Jedi is a good movie. They want that to be the common myth. And so anyone that speaks out against that gets gaslighted. And this is a prime example of it. Christopher McQuarrie is just being smart. He's just going, you know what? This whole situation is terrible. He's not saying why. You know, he's insinuating it's because of the fans. But he has to be smart enough to know the fans are rightly pissed off. Right? If he was a virtue signaling social justice warrior, he'd be out there right now defending this stuff, defending all of the leftist Me Too thing and everything. But he hasn't. He's kept his mouth shut, especially because he's a white male. So he has to know why the fans are pissed off. And the fact that he's going, I ain't touching this shit, that just means he's smart and knows what's going on. And then proving his points where there's no winning, all he says is, I'm not getting involved. And there's an article that somehow devolves into, this is how we oppress women and the disabled and gays and people of color. All he literally said is, Ryan Johnson, I don't know why you do this. I'm not doing it. And suddenly it's becoming about oppressing women, gays, disabled, and people of color.
Indeed. And how. William, over to you. Is it really, how much is a social commentary, how much of a social commentary is it that a director who wasn't in the running to direct a Star Wars movie has said preemptively he's not going to direct a Star Wars movie?
I think this is just another shot in the long war against actual Star Wars fans. And I posted a video link to the channel Doomcock Reviews, which is a hilarious skit review site, where he sort of lays out a psychologicalizing conspiracy theory about this whole thing, that this is just to protect Kathleen Kennedy. And it's kind of interesting, and I'll let other folks watch and react to that. But the idea here, we've got this tribalism again, right? Like, because obviously the racist, misogynist fans are just too stupid to realize that if they attack a white man that could be at the helm of the movie, that they're just not going to get what they want. They're going to get something even worse. They're going to get a black or LGBT or even an LGBT and black director. And that's sort of the underlying theme here, right? It's like, don't, you know, shut up and take what we give you or you'll get something worse. And isn't this really similar to the Hillary explanations for why she lost the election? It was because of the rural white people that were voting against their own interests. Like, these fans are voting, they're voting with their dollars, right? They want good, consistent story, and they don't want politics. I mean, people in the Star Wars fandom, it's not that, there are some that are more conservative, but there's a lot of liberal and even leftist folks that don't want their escapist fantasy to be full of social justice commentary about today. That there's no reason for that. There's no artistic reason for that. What they want is they want to capture that spirit of the original Star Wars trilogy. And to say that that's somehow a misogynist criticism is to kind of miss what they're saying and misrepresent what they're saying.
Yeah, and it's again one of these moments where there's literally no self-reflection from this side, right? Where if you had any modicum of actual empathy, something that you, the left, continues to say is the number one primary goal of being an evolved human being, if you actually had any empathy whatsoever, you might consider saying, are the fans upset for any legitimate reason whatsoever? Even if I disagree with their reason, is there something to why the fans are upset and why, for instance, the Han Solo movie ended up losing money, despite the fact it is one of the biggest franchises in history, with one of the most iconic characters in history, with some of the biggest intellectual property protections in history. Is there something to what they're saying? Should we consider toning down the messaging in the movie? Should we consider taking out the social justice themes in the final movie? But no, there will be none of that whatsoever. There will continue to be this elitist, holier than thou, we know better than you, you're a bunch of backwoods hicks mentality, and thus Star Wars will continue to suck as it has the past two movies. So
these, I think it's a delicious irony. These people that are saying that the behavior of the toxic fans are the problem are the same people that want to stand in front of random secretaries of various things house and protest 24/7. get them kicked out of restaurants when they're minding their own business. You know, we've got this rampant emotionalism of, you know, apparently civility is somehow fascist or Nazi-ist. Like, I don't know exactly the words they use, but like if you're civil to someone, you're clearly a Nazi. And then they're saying that the behavior by the toxic fans is uncivil and somehow wrong. I mean, what if they, you know, what if you're the evil one? Like, did you even stop to consider that? If this is somehow out of bounds behavior, they're not coming to Rian Johnson's house and protesting. They're not interrupting him at restaurants, right? I mean, I haven't seen any stories of that.
Isn't there I forget the something in Web show, British comedy sketch, where they do a sketch where they're Nazis, and in the middle of fighting, one of them turns to the other and goes, wait a minute, are we the baddies? Anyway. Made me think of that, William. Justin.
Well, that's exactly what Antifa is, Daniel. Exactly, yeah. What you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to ask a question that was this, which is on the tip of my tongue because I've lost it entirely. Well, basically, you know, is there any salvaging it at this point? Is really what I'm trying to get at. Like, what could Star Wars possibly do at this point to regain fandom? They're not going to remake The Last Jedi. Well, is there anything they could do?
Well, I think hiring J.J. Abrams is the first step, which is why I'm interested in your belief that they're going to double down on everything. I think hiring J.J. Abrams is a step backwards. They're just going back to what they did before. You think J.J. is going to toe the line? Because with all the weaknesses of J.J.'s writing, right? And the biggest weakness of J.J. Abrams as a writer is that he doesn't have the reveals equal the mystery box concept, right? He's great with, oh, hey, look at this mystery box. There's something cool in it. But then he opens it up and, you know, it ends in a church. So that's his biggest weakness. But he's never been social justice. You think he's going to toe the line?
I don't know if they're going to make him toe the line. That's the thing. I don't know if there's been legitimate self-reflection over at Disney. I think there might be, if we see Kathleen Kennedy take a step back, maybe that is legitimate self-reflection, but guilty until proven innocent here. I have no confidence that Disney is going to let JJ do his thing. They're just going to impose on him, you know, some predetermined storyline. And Rian Johnson talked about the fact that they know how the series is going to end, right? So it's kind of, quote unquote, already written. I don't know how much he's going to have a say in it. Unless he goes like a Star Trek route and creates like a, bring this back, a parallel universe shift where it's like, oh, all that stuff in The Last Jedi, that universe. Was just, that was one universe that doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully he would do that. And what you just said is exactly what I think is going to be the biggest sign. It has to do with Kathleen Kennedy's continued involvement. If she takes a step back or a step down, then things are going to get better, because there's two things we have to look at current Disney and the way it's being run, and it's their franchise game. And the two things we have to look at are Marvel and Star Wars. And since Kathleen Kennedy took over Star Wars, things haven't been going well, right? There was The Force Awakens, which was great, but how much of that money that was made was because it was legitimately a great movie? I think it was a good movie. Was it a great movie? I don't know. And how much was excitement for a new actual Star Wars that didn't suck balls like the prequels? And then since then, everything has been getting worse, right? I mean, Rogue One was like 2/3 of a movie. The last third was great. The rest of it was terrible. We've talked about Solo. You can go listen to our Patreon exclusive review. We've talked about The Last Jedi. I believe we did a Patreon exclusive for that as well. If not, we did one on this show itself. But then you look at Marvel, and everything Disney has done for Marvel since they took over for the Avengers, right? So the Avengers was the first movie that Disney co-owned Marvel. Before that, all the original Iron Mans and stuff, that was Marvel on its own. Now notice the philosophical shift in Marvel movies in the MCU to be more like this social justice approach, right? That's when the whole Tony Stark being evil and, you know, his egoism being bad started.
Yeah.
But Marvel has been making a shitload of money since. As long as Marvel continues to make that money and Disney continues to print money because of Marvel, they're not going to change this strategy. They've already basically made their money back tenfold with Star Wars, and they're going to continue to with the two lands in the park, because people are going to be driven to that for their nostalgia for the old movies. That is what's going to continue, and that is what Disney's going to make its money off of, like it's been doing with Star Tours and Hyperspace Mountain and things like that. So it's not a sunk cost for Disney yet. But if Disney loses that Marvel money and they get this similar backlash with Marvel, then you're going to see Disney as an overall strategy reassess. Because if you actually look at Disney and what they've been doing for years, it goes well beyond Marvel and Star Wars that they've been putting in this kind of messaging into their movies.
Indeed. Well, everything millennials touch turns to dust. But what about Generation Z? How are they different? Well, according to a new survey, Generation Z might go, I don't know what direction this might go, but 2/3 identify as exclusively heterosexual, the lowest percentage of any living generation. The Telegraph article begins, "Homosexuality is no longer the taboo it once was, but figures suggest that young people are even more open to experimentation than previously thought. Only 2/3 of Generation Z identify as solely heterosexual, in stark contrast to previous generations, a study has found. Research by Ipsos Mori found that 66% of young people between 16 and 22 are exclusively heterosexual, the lowest figure of any generation. Among millennials, it's 71%, and 85% of Gen X and 88% of baby boomers. The research group suggested that social media was playing a part, with young people more likely to be aware of different sexualities because of the availability of such information on the internet. Are they referring to porn, Justin?
Porn is turning them gay.
Well, good. I didn't have to write a punchline for that one. You gave me that punchline for it. But it's not turning them gay. It's turning them like pansexual. I mean, yeah, like the lead singer of Panic at the Disco comes out. He's like, I'm like pansexual. And again, I still don't know what that means. Like, it's very confusing because
large frying pans are very attractive. That's what pansexual
means. Well, that's what I was going to say. So either it means you're into frying pans, or it's a weird way of saying you're a pedophile because you're into Peter Pan?
I thought it had something to do with non-stick surfaces.
You know, there's a kink for everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're certainly exposed to all of these other terms, but it's not changing their self-perception. All it's doing is teenagers who want to feel special, and now that we have a global society where you have to be unique on social media and not just in your town of, you know, your high school of 1,000 kids, now you have to be special on the entire internet, you're just giving them excuses to be special. Oh, you know, I'm not heterosexual, I'm saucer sexual. Like, that's all it is. They're just coming up with these terms. And then you go, what is saucer sexual? Oh, saucer sexual is, life is like a circle and I'm just attracted to all of life. So it's just a saucer, saucer sexual.
But who do you want to have sex with? Well, women, of course. But I'm not a heterosexual. Right. It's right, a lot of that.
I don't limit myself. If there was a possibility that someone who, in this great circle of life, I found attractive, anyone, no matter what, as long as they're part of the circle of life, then I would have sex with, even if it was Simba, because Simba the lion, he was such a part of the circle of life, I would have sex with him because I'm a saucer sexual. But yeah, I tend to like women because, like, vaginas.
Now, there's a lot, William, to do with the wording of this poll. Identify as exclusively heterosexual, because there's a segment in here which is either super poorly written and I don't understand what it actually refers to, or is hyper revealing about this current study. And it's this paragraph, and I'll let you respond after this. Quote, the figures suggest a much higher level of openness to non-heterosexuality than previous polls had suggested, with the most recent ONS figures showing that in 2016, just 2% of people age 16 or over identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, with the number rising to 4% among 16 to 24-year-olds. The overall number had risen from 1.7% the year before. So it's hard to compare apples and bisexuality here, but it sounds like, from the way this is written, in 2016, 16 to 24-year-olds, only 4% identified as lesbian, gay, or bisexual, but now, 2 years later, a full third identify as not exclusively heterosexual, whatever that means. What the hell is going on here, William, as a resident gay?
Well, remember, I identify as a woman for the show, but
oh,
I'll put my rainbow flag back on for a second for this one. But I think there's a couple things going on here. I think part of it is like what you guys are saying. It's fashionable to be out of the norm here, right? And this is something we saw a cycle of this, you know, in the late 60s, right? Like, this isn't something new, right? We go through this sort of sexual openness, sexual repression sort of cycle, right? We've done it a couple times in American history. So that doesn't surprise me too self. And I want to say something positive before I say a bunch of things negative. Like, there is a sense in which it is more acceptable in younger generations to be gay or lesbian or bi, even, which I think is that's a positive thing, right? Like, I know, especially, you know, I've seriously dated a bi guy before, and there were a lot of interesting challenges for him. You know, girls thinking that, well, you're bi, so therefore you're going to cheat, right? Like, no, that's not how that works exactly. And things like that, right? Like, so I can understand there's some positive sentiment like going on here, and maybe this survey supports that. But I think there's also a terrible negative thing to point out here. I'm less optimistic. I'm much more pessimistic about this. This isn't just about being fashionable. This is about, I don't want to be part of the oppressive group, right? Those heterosexual white men, those are the oppressors. So of course I'm not going to identify as heterosexual. Heterosexual is the new MAGA hat.
Wait, make America gay again? No, that's the opposite. Okay. Justin, it just occurred to me that bisexual has to be on the outs, because doesn't bisexual imply two genders?
Yeah, that's why you have a lot of people saying pan now instead of bi. And
is that the reason?
I think so. I think it's super confusing. People, these concepts mean things, right? There's lots of research about it. And to try and make a new term, pansexual, like, what does it even mean? It doesn't have a definition.
Means you love half goats.
It doesn't make any sense.
Well, Daniel, that's exactly why it's good that you're pointing it out, because what they're doing is moving the goalpost. When you talk about 2 years ago, it was like 4%, and now it's one third, 33%. That's because they've changed the goalpost. The question before was, are you gay or bi? Which people are like, no. Now it's, are you not exclusively heterosexual? That's not even the same question.
Yeah, and it's not getting the same kind of data. Like, you know, like, Justin, when you see Chris Pratt's abs, do you think that's attractive? Does that make you gay or bi? Right? If I see Gal Gadot, does that, and think, wow, she looks hot, does that make me less gay? But it certainly doesn't make me exclusively homosexual or whatever that would mean, right? I can see why you would want to change the question if you're trying to seek a different answer. And I think that's what's happening here, but it doesn't make any sense. What are you trying to measure here? If you're trying to measure whether gay, bi, lesbian relationships and marriage and societal interaction is more tolerated, then we've got good numbers on that, right? And it is more tolerated in Western democracies and even in the United States. So what are we trying to get at here other than tracking a virtue signal, right? If less people identify as heterosexual, then there's less oppressors in the world. So good.
If someone looks at Gal Gadot and thinks, wow, she's hot, that makes them a goddamn human being.
My point just exactly. To be clear.
What they're trying to do, William, is they're trying to destroy heterosexuality. They want people to believe it's normal not to be exclusively heterosexual. It's the same thing I was saying about the gaslighting in the Star Wars article. They want people to accept that The Last Jedi is a good movie, and they want people to accept that being heterosexual is not the norm. And what this does is creates that perception. Because
they want us to turn into all Captain Jacks, right? Just everyone a Captain Jack.
Correct. Right, correct. They all want us to turn into Torchwood. That's what they want it to be.
Oh, I was like, what does Jack Sparrow have to do with this?
No. He's talking better about Captain Jack Harkness. Oh, yeah.
No.
Jack Sparrow's the better Captain Jack. But he's talking about Jack Harkness in Doctor Who was randomly a pansexual character. And then the show Torchwood was about his spinoff of Doctor Who, where they investigated like alien and paranormal, and then randomly people would fuck on the show for no reason, and you're like, wait, I thought I was just watching a sci-fi show. Why are these people having sex for no reason? And it wasn't like it was part of the plot or anything. It was just like, oh, now we need to have like some gay sex in here, or now we just need to have these random characters having sex. To me, William, and this is really nerdy, but the craziest thing about Torchwood really exemplifies what we're talking about here. I remember Yanto, the character who looks like Quentin Tarantino / Jordan Pundick from Newfound Glory.
Yeah.
And there was nothing about his sexuality or his romance in the whole show. And then in season 3, they were like, let's just have him be in love with Captain Jack, and they're just fucking. And I was like, where did this come from? It was just you wanted to have a gay relationship in there. And that's the difference between something following from the plot and forcing something to make it seem normal and like it's real. And that's what they're trying to do with this article. They want kids to read this, and they want adults to read this and feel guilty. They want kids to read it and go, oh, wow, I can be whatever I want. If I want to identify as a pansexual butterfly, I can be Tinkerbell. Or they want adults to read and go, man, maybe I really didn't understand reality. Maybe me growing up, my society, my culture was really oppressive. That's why it's gaslighting.
No one expects the Spanish Inquisition or the gay sex scene, apparently. Well, in other oppressor news, some lady, what's her name? Lee Kaminsky has written an article for the BBC making a case for renaming women's body parts. Yes, here we are, folks. Okay, let's begin. Take a tour of the female pelvis. Done and done. and you'll encounter a few incongruous people along the way. I encountered no one along the way.
I think Daniel, I think you already did that, and you're getting your trophy, which is called a baby, right?
That's right. Conquered. Came and saw and conquered, to use a phrase. Okay. I encountered no incongruous people along the way, by the way, much like Lee did. But here we go. Anyway, continuing. How did James Douglas end up tucked behind the uterus? What is Gabriel Fallopian doing hanging around the ovaries? Why is Caspar Bothelin, the younger, attached to the labia? And can we trust Ernest Graffenberg's claim that he actually found the G-spot? Whether you know it or not, each of these dudes have ended up immortalized in the female pelvis as the pouch of Douglas, Bartholin's glands, Fallopian tubes, and the elusive Graffenberg spot. The truth is, men are all over women's bodies. Yeah, they are. Dead, white, male anatomists, that is. Their names live on eponymously, immortalized, like audacious explorers for conquering the geography of the female pelvis as if it were terra nullius. Okay, the article goes on to talk, you know, about other body parts that are named after Greek gods or, I don't know, veterinarians, apparently, or something. I have no idea. And it goes on to say that, look, this gendered language can affect the way we think about things because gendered language leads to metaphor, like, and literally an example they use is like the war on heart disease, for instance, or a battle against cancer, which I guess is a bad thing because it's masculine. In fact, we should have a line dance with cancer or something instead. But it basically, the article suggests that we could rename some of these things that are more female friendly so that they're less gender biased. And I'll get there. For instance, Swedish activists have called for English speakers to replace the sexist terms in their own language, talking about how they did it in their language, such as renaming the hymen with the term vaginal corona.
Is there a My Sharona parody song we can do with that? The
vaginal corona.
Won't that just make Mexicans mad?
that's a commercial that's going to move some product. Right,
no one's going to possibly make a sex joke involving beer.
The article ends, it remains to be seen whether these terms will catch on, but perhaps people should be encouraged to create the language they need. As for anatomical terminology that has patriarchal residue, Boroditsky says, letting it fall away is the death it needs to have. Justin, would renaming lady parts just completely end sexism?
Well, obviously. I mean, if we just named things after the fact that sex is evil and the penis is disgusting and intrusive, then life would get so much better because then everyone would be so happy not worrying about if men wanted to fuck you all the time. I mean, I know that's a great source of stress in everyone's life. It's just the fear of men going around and just fucking them. Like, that's so terrible.
Yeah. We should just rename the penis the rape stick and just get it over with and just be done with genderism.
No, but rape, that word is also sexist. Because
it's
sexist? Yeah, because it comes from a time, I think rapier is the etymology, and it comes from a time when women were property. So you can't use the word rape either.
What term are we supposed to use? Not to get into this.
I don't know. I'm just trying to apply this logic consistently. That's exactly my point. We can't use the word rape according to this logic.
It's the toxic.
It's the toxicity utensil. The toxicity utensil.
That leaves patriarchal residue.
I'm going to rename this episode now.
Apparently. This article is right for parody, but yeah, go ahead.
This reminds me of an experience I had undergrad, right? So I've told all of you before. That
is this your lose your virginity story again?
No, that was much later than undergrad. Come on, everyone knows this by now. That was much later than undergrad. Everyone knows by now that the reason I'm so familiar with all this stuff is the school I went to from 01 to 05 was already doing all of these things. It was already the nexus of this. So I've experienced this for years. That's part of the reason I'm talking about Disney, because the guy who used to run Disney went to my undergrad. So, like I'm saying, I understand this all completely. I had a class where we were talking about, like, labels and names and how that you know, creates something's identity, blah, blah, blah. Again, you know, backwards, A is A, then you give it a name, but that's a whole other story. And some girl had the audacity to sit there in class and go, yeah, it's like how, and I'm paraphrasing from my memory, obviously, this isn't an exact quote. It's like how terms for women's genitals are used as slurs. Like, why do we see women's genitals as something we make a slur about? And I just looked at her and I was like, dick, cock, and there was no response. Like, there's just this belief that we've treated women's sexuality in this way that's different than how we've treated men's sexuality, and that contradiction is coming out now to make it look like it's all men that are the problem. I mean, in this article, right, there's a picture of a flower, and it says, the word vagina originates from sheath, as in to sheath a sword. And the only way you would take that caption as negative is what William was just saying about rape. Is it if it's the idea that the man is necessarily being oppressive by penetrating. But that's what the action is. But we're calling that negative now. Where if you think about the metaphor of sex, isn't sheath the perfect name? All you've done by having this caption is convince me that vagina is the perfect name. But you don't believe it is because you think deep down that men are the problem. So congratulations, you fucked up. You made me dig in deeper. And that's a double entendre.
Well, Justin's found the name for his first girl child.
Gina? Yeah.
You said it's the perfect name. Just saying. William, is there anything possible you could have to say about this article about women's anatomy?
Well, as someone who has not studied it quite as extensively as you two, what I see here is the continued from the left war on words, and which is really a war on concepts. We can't use these concepts. We can't have words describe things. We have to constantly be moving the bar and confusing people. You know, how many people, if you walked up to a random member of the patriarchy, brushed off their patriarchal residue, and asked them where the word vagina comes from, I don't think they would know.
Yeah. It's so disconnected from its origins that it doesn't particularly matter, does it? Unless I had read this article, I would not have known that fallopian was a guy. I would have thought it was some medical term. Because who cares? It's just what it's called. It's not called the women are idiots tube or something like that. It's not called the women shouldn't vote sheath or whatever. Like, it's just fallopian
tube. That's too bad. It's really too bad it's not called that, though.
You know, Daniel, you've given me a great idea. From now on, I will call my penis the patriarchy.
Watch it grow.
It's going to be great.
Yes, I don't.
Doesn't Trump already do that with Melania?
I don't even want to think about any of that. It's all crazy. I agree with William. This is essentially an epistemological battle that they're having, which is we will not allow you to have solid, legitimate concepts. We will essentially create this epistemological confusion to the point where you will be able to not be able to know anything, and therefore you'll have to rely on us to be the arbiters of truth. And now that sounds mega, and it sounds grandstanding, and it sounds conspiratorial, and I don't mean to say that there's some horrible leftist in the sky sort of manipulating things. The point is, this is how the left attacks, truth. It's how they attack reason. It's how they attack logic, by not allowing you to have concepts. You're just not allowed to have them. The moment you have a concept is the moment that concept must be destroyed. Justin, you and I learned this in grad school from a guy named Vitanza, whose entire power structure, which was heralded as the greatest invention ever, was the idea that as soon as anything, literally anything, word, person, idea, sports team, as soon as they had power, then that thing must be destroyed. And by power, it could mean anything from being on the top, could be recognized as being truthful, whatever, because only in the destruction do we fight the oppressors. And anything that is true is necessarily oppressive because it oppresses everything that is not true. So that was a long rant, but point being, F you, I'm calling it the fallopian tubes.
Well, yeah, that's Daniel. What you're referring to is because it comes down to two perspectives. Do you agree that every relationship is either, and I'm not asking you, I mean, this is what they think. Do you agree that every relationship is someone who's oppressing and someone who's oppressor? Basically someone who's in control and someone who is suffering under that. And now the alternative is that is what Ayn Rand posited, and she said it in a way that that I am not aware of anyone having said it beforehand, but it's the traitor principle. It's the idea that we can work with each other as equals. And I think maybe you could argue the founders, and this kind of foreshadows the final segment, the founding fathers of America said that, and they just didn't say it as clearly, and all she did was concretize that in a principle. She created a clear concept, which is the traitor principle. But those are the two basic ideas. And to end up at a place with of Vitanza's perspective and argument is if you have the idea that anyone who has power, or as you said, any truth, necessarily is oppressing anyone who doesn't have that power or truth. If you agree with that premise, Vitanza's logic follows. I get it. If everything that's powerful is necessarily oppressive, then yeah, destroy everything.
Yeah.
Isn't that also anarchy though?
It is. It's just an anarchy where he gets to be philosopher king. And right. I also want to point out that if you want to do a bit of psychologizing, I think that psychology of, saying every relationship is an oppressor and oppressed is basically saying if I were in the position of power, I would oppress, is really what that's saying.
Right. Well, that's the Whedon law, right? If you're crying so much that men are being poor to women and raping them and sexually assault them, maybe we should look at them. You know, it's how I feel about Bo Burnham right now, right? Where the Me Too started coming out, and he goes, all of us as men need to take a look at what we do in our lives and how we treat women. And now he's releasing an article called Eighth Grade about an awkward 14-year-old girl. That's not suspicious. Somebody want to check his past? You're exactly right. It's the projection.
Yeah, it's totally projection. If everything is being an oppressor, that means if I had power, I would oppress you. That's what that means. The end.
The end. It's a great ending. And I want to close out this segment with the ending with a challenge out there to a Midsiders. Midsiders, if one of you has a daughter, I challenge you to name her Valerie Gina.
God.
All right. You guys want to move on to talk about some art?
Yeah, that's enough vagina talk for me.
Well, it's interesting you say that because we're going to have a lot of dark and violent things here in the art segment. Let's talk about them in The Hopeful Romantic with JML.
Put me into syndication, broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio. Focused on.
I did not get a chance to watch anything this week, so I can't do a review. Can either of you do a review of anything?
I literally watched no television this week.
Yeah,
did you watch any sonogram footage?
No, not even that. Not even that.
Yeah, it was a busy week for me too this week, but I did have some old DS9 episodes on in the background while I was working.
How was that?
DS9 is great.
Yeah, I think I even sent you an article, Justin, and you surprised me. You actually, there was an article about some collector's toys and how they were surprised that some minor character had a toy in the first gen of the DS9. I sent you a message saying, hey, I guess I found what I'm getting you for Christmas, but unfortunately, I'm still going to have to keep looking.
Yeah, you shared it in Discord, and you shared it in Discord in like the middle of the night. And I'm laying there in my girlfriend's bed, looking through pictures of my action figures to see if I had the figure, because I vividly remembered the figure, which is like I think it's the first time in history someone was laying in their girlfriend's bed looking to see if they had an obscure Star Trek action figure.
Most of those people don't have girlfriends, so
it was Vedic Barile for all of you wondering. I know you're all on the edge of your seats.
Yeah, and it actually, to make a very nerdy point, it's not the first generation of DS9 figures. The first generation is basically all the major characters. Then they started releasing the other minor characters later, and I went through and bought the ones I thought were most important. And I always found it strange.
I think you're right. Because I don't think Odo was in the first generation, strangely.
Right. No, Odo was in the first generation.
Justin knows is so uncertain about so many things, but when it comes to DS9 figures, there's an absolutism in his voice that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
No, I know I'm right. I would literally bet my life on it.
No, I would. I would. This is the most Adam Carolla I've ever been in my life. You fucking people can keep saying that it's wrong, but it's going to be right, and I'm going to tell you it's right. It's like when he makes a bet, and he's like, I tell you what year it is. That's the way I am with these. No, and I always found it strange that there was a Vedek Burial action figure, but there was no Kai Winn or Kai Opaka. I found that very strange as well. So, super nerdy point. And if you were in Discord, you could have witnessed firsthand me being like, I know I have this figure. If you were in Discord, William, did you have something to say?
Oh, I was going to say, we post more than just action figures, just so everyone knows. There's a constant stream of me finding something hilarious. Say. Yeah. And posting it out.
Yeah, other than action figures, there's Funko Pops, there's bobbleheads. You know. That's about it.
No, we also post the trailer takedown preview every week, guys. Come on. So it goes right to you. You don't have to go to Facebook or Twitter to find it, or themidside.com/podcast, or just themidside.com. You can go to all those places to watch the trailers before or during the show. If you want to pause it during the show and watch the trailer before we go to the next one, before you hear trailer takedown Dan go next trailer or second trailer. See why he does it? Because I'm terrible at it. Rather than having to go to those sources, it goes right to you if you're in the Discord channel. And actually, we have some great midsiders in there who have some great commentary about it. So you can participate in that discussion as well, which honestly, if you do that, I'm just going to use what you say and make it my opinion is, so I don't have to do the work of even watching the trailer. So come make the show better and make it the way you want to be by going to Discord. Is that a good enough plug, William?
It'll do for now.
All right, let's move forward here.
Trailer takedown. First trailer.
Summer of 84 is another movie about kids / teenagers in the 80s dealing with evil. This time, they all look slightly older than Stranger Things or It, but it's the same sort of thing where there's bicycles, there's suburbia, and there's a serial killer living next door. And that's the entire trailer. Now, my instinct was, I'm going to be sick of this because, as I've said, I'm not a big Stranger Things fan. This is very similar to It, which is actually excellent. It is excellent. And I thought I was going to be like, okay, I'm done with this. This is another thing that's similar to all of these things. But they captured what made 80s movies so great in this trailer. And it made me want to see it. It didn't matter if I've seen all this crap before. I was like, you know what? I really, really miss 80s movies. Now, there's a slight fear in me that they're going to turn this into some social justice message somehow. You know, it's not like It, where It was a book that was written back then. So they're just taking the story that already existed in that time and doing it in that time period. This is a movie about the summer of 84 that is written and directed nowadays with nowadays ideas. So I am slightly worried about that. But I think that 80s movie making is so underappreciated that I guess maybe I'm being an emotionalist here. But because I think it's so underappreciated and I love it so much, this trailer gave me a strong desire to see this movie. Hug. Daniel?
I'm sure the pitch for this movie was, it's Stranger Things, but instead of monsters, we find out that we're the monsters. But it still looks good. It's original-ish, other than it's playing off a genre, but it's not, as far as I can tell, an adaptation of a book or a graphic novel or someone's Tumblr. So I'm going
to
hug.
Not to burst your bubble, Daniel? But you've heard of Rear Window by Hitchcock?
Yes.
The guy lives next door to a serial killer?
Yeah. Well, I mean, are they explicitly saying this is a remake of Rear Window?
No.
Okay, then I'm in. If they explicitly said we're remaking Rear Window with a group of teenagers set in the 80s, then I would tackle. But otherwise, it gets a normal hug from me.
William?
I didn't get bit by the nostalgia bug, so I just saw this as, oh, it's Stranger Things the movie. I'm not interested in this. It looks like 80s horror suspense. I guess it's good, but it just felt cliched to me right now. So tackle.
I love how you guys keep saying it's Stranger Things, and I know you're not trying to reference it, but it sounds like you are, and I appreciate that.
Anything to accidentally please you, Justin.
Yeah, now if you could just teach my girlfriend that, it'd be great. I don't know if anyone heard that in the background.
The sound of her breaking up with you? No, we didn't hear that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Second trailer.
Mandy is another Nick Cage movie. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't understand about 50% of this trailer. It starts out as like this weird, psychedelic, like violent thing. And then in the middle, it becomes sort of like Evil Dead, where Nick Cage is like, I'm about to just kick the shit out of evil. And I'm like, yeah, where was this trailer? And then from that point on, I was like, yeah, this looks like a good movie. But before that, I don't even understand what happened. It was like they cut two different trailers. It was like halfway through, the professor came in to read the kid's paper and only edited the second half. And that's the only half that's any decent. So because of that, even though I appreciate the fact that Nick Cage has just said fuck it recently and he's just taking the most insane roles ever, I have to tackle. Daniel?
Isn't this the movie that was so violent that like people at Cannes walked out of the screening of it and some were like throwing up and stuff? Isn't that this movie? Do you know?
I haven't heard of that.
Anyway, it looks like it, and I like, you know, the sort of over the top. I'm not going to say it's romanticism. But it's stylized. That's the word I'm looking for. I like the over the top stylized filmmaking, but at the same time, if this is the film I've heard of, I can't deal with that level of violence. I just can't. So tackle.
William.
Yeah, this looks like way too much gore for me. It's not something I would be interested in. Although I appreciate what Nick Cage is doing here. I'm so torn because I want to see some Nick Cage in not a completely shitty role. It looks like he's got some awesome action and some good one-liners, but it's just not for me. Tackle.
So, Daniel, The movie you're referring to is called The House That Jack Built. Apparently is about a serial killer and 100 people walked out of it. And it's been called 2.5 hours of self-reflexive torture porn. What's the difference between self-reflexive and self-reflective?
whether or not someone wants to sound pretentious or not.
Okay. So it's called The House That Jack Built.
Well, that's good to know. It's not that film. I think I stand by my assessment. It's maybe just a slightly less sickened tackle. It's more of a standard middle of the road tackle.
Final trailer.
Mile 22 is a Mark Wahlberg movie with guns and action. And I'm going to be completely, completely honest here. I completely forgot to watch this trailer. Why, you ask? Because you know I'm going to see this movie. Like, do I need to see the trailer? Do I need to watch it? So in my prep, I had already just like put it in my head as a hug. So I guess I just assumed I had watched it. So hug. Daniel?
To give you the synopsis, Mark Wahlberg loads a gun, finds a girl, and then discovers the Asian Jason Bourne, also known as Jason Bourne. Then there's some explosions and some ass kicking. And then they eat at Wahlburger and go to a Patriots game.
Super hug.
Tom Brady signs Mark Wahlberg's gun. And then they go hang out with Giselle, and then Bruce Willis is shows up.
Question is, what? Is that a gay metaphor, signing Mark Wahlberg's gun?
Is it more of a hug if it is, or?
There's nothing you could say right now that would make this not a hug.
And Bruce Willis shows up, and they all go out and eat Cold Stone. And then have Funko Pops made of themselves.
Hug.
Yeah. The subtitle
when
is...
When do they buy Funko Pops?
The subtitle of this movie is only for Justin and Lesneski.
Do they all look at the Funko Pops of themselves and try to argue whose are cooler?
They do, indeed. And then Bruce Willis turns a gun on a flipper and caps him in the back of the head.
They're perfect! Let's make this movie. Crowdfunding. Somebody set up Kickstarter in Indiegogo. Let's crowdfund this movie. We just need enough money to get Tom Brady, Bruce Willis, and Mark Wahlberg in it, and Giselle.
So $3.5 billion being about enough.
Yeah.
This movie looks like all the things I just said, except minus interesting tackle.
Tackle.
William.
I am all in for this movie. There's guns, there's explosions, there's good action in the trailer. The plot looks thin but interesting. That's all you need for a action movie, something to tie it all together. So I'm giving this one a hug.
Hug.
See, Daniel? What you said and what William said sounded exactly the same to me. They translated exactly the same way in my brain.
Except that William said the plot looked thin. I'm pretty sure it's not there. Pretty sure there's no plot. It's just boom, Jason Bourne, and Mark Wahlberg. That's it.
All I hear is Tom Brady, Bruce Willis, and Mark Wahlberg are comparing their Funko Pops of themselves with each other. That's all I keep hearing. Every time you guys describe the movie, that's what I hear.
Well, you won't be disappointed at all.
All right. But you know what I am disappointed in? Every time I read them, the internet comments section. Find out what I'm talking about this week in our dick pic.
Some people really try to believe what you taught me. Some people just quote lyrics to make themselves think they're emotionally sick.
Gizmodo had an article this week about how Facebook apologized for removing part of the declaration on the 4th of July. I guess someone posted it in the declaration in chunks, and part of it was oppressive, of course, and Facebook automatically removed it with its automatic content filter, and then they apologized for it later, said, we get most things right, but we don't get this one right. I think maybe they got it the way they wanted to, but there was too much of a backlash. That's not what this story is about, though. This story is about when I scrolled down on Gizmodo, and I found the first comment.
Mistake number one.
But we wouldn't have this segment if I didn't read comment sections.
True, you also wouldn't have a therapy bill.
Now, I don't go to therapy anymore. I live in California, I have to eat. At some point, this is the comment, at some point we're going to, as a country, have to reckon with the fact that the founding fathers, despite being able to put together a framework for progressive representative republic, still not fully realized, were racist, sexist, bigoted assholes, many of whom wanted to be free from England so that they could make more money, not for any pure reasons. And sorry, Daniel, I'm going to go to William here first. William, how does it feel that you trying to make money with all of your businesses is not a pure reason for doing those businesses?
Yeah, I'm just an evil capitalist, you know, giving people sandwiches in exchange for money. That's just pure evil. I mean, think of what they do with those sandwiches. They actually eat them. And they give me money for
it. Yeah, but eventually all of them turn to shit. So what food, are you really selling them?
Food is a necessity. They should just be given away.
That's right.
Yeah, it's funny that you've latched onto that one first, because I was more concerned that they left out homophobic. They said racist, sexist, bigoted, but I didn't see homophobic in there.
What about ableist?
Oh, ableist?
Bigoted
I was,
is...
Yeah.
Bigoted's an umbrella term. When they get sick of listing out all of their words, they just say bigoted, and it covers
That's
everything.
That's not true. We add a new letter to LGBTQI plus LMNOP every day. But we're forgetting the context, right? Like, are we supposed to judge everyone in the past by today's norms and standards? This doesn't take away from mistakes or things that we can look back and say, well, that was bad. That was a bad idea. That was evil. But at the same time, these people did something great and worth celebrating. So what is the point of, as a country, reckoning with the fact that the founding fathers would not be, you know, race, or they would be racist, sexist, bigoted assholes today, considering the rest of what was going on in the world at that time? Were they racist, sexist, bigoted assholes for the time?
Right. It's also a matter to me of, even if you look back and say, for instance, that the founders knew better about slavery, for instance, and that many of them had their own consciences challenged over slavery at the time, especially when writing All Men Are Created Equal. It's like, okay, the founders of this country created the first ever constitutional republic that respected rights and moved the ball forward on human rights more than any other people in world history until then or since then. What? But they also didn't end slavery immediately. They also didn't give women the right to vote immediately. Okay. How much do you want them to do? They were a group of 28 to 45-year-olds. How much do you want them to do? But they set up a framework that all these bigoted, horrible institutions crumbled under over the next 200 years. And in fact, we fought a civil war to fulfill the ideological promises of the founding. Hundreds of thousands of people literally died to fully enact the ideas that the founders were talking about. It took a while.
Well, Daniel,
but compared
you need
to all
with
of
the
human
fact
history,
that the people who died in the Civil War were racist, sexist, bigoted assholes.
That's right. I do need to come to terms with that fact. But, you know, all these horrible social ills, and to some degree they all exist today, you have to acknowledge that, but it's nothing, literally nothing compared to what it was, crumbled in 200-some years. Compared to 6 million years of human history. It's a remarkable achievement by any standard whatsoever. And to look back and say we have to reckon with the fact that they were blah, 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 they weren't social justice idiots, is a total drop of context, and it is a total injustice to the greatness that they accomplished in their lifetime.
Well, Daniel, there's two things that spring to mind from what you and William have said. The first is from what you and William have said, and it's this idea that everyone thinks the founding fathers thought a certain way and that was the end of it.
Right.
We had a discussion similar to this at the Midside Meetup, and this really comes down to people who are non-experts about places and people speaking as if they are. This person, this commenter, is speaking as if he is an expert on the Founding Fathers when he's not. We don't trust these experts anymore. I will always remember going to Monticello, and one of the things they pointed out that Thomas Jefferson said was, the next generation is going to have to deal with the slavery issue. So what he was basically saying is what you just said, Daniel. I just founded an entire fucking country and revolutionized government and society throughout the history of the world. Maybe you guys can handle slavery. And then they did. They had a civil war and they handled it. So we sit here and we make these comments. Oh, well, they were all racist, sexy, bigoted assholes. No, you're a non-expert acting like you are when the sources are out there. And you run your mouth in that way. And that happens with almost every genre and expertise that's out there. People who are not experts make these overarching statements as if they understand it. To go back to the beginning of the episode, they take the all nuance out of it. And that's what's happening here, as if they were just that simple. It was that simple. Everyone back there was just the same. No one understood what was going on. Only we understand today. And that leads into the second thing. Daniel, what do you always say the social justice types want? The leftist types want? They want destruction, right?
Yeah.
Well, didn't literally the founding of America destroy the British Empire? Didn't we fight a war over that?
Indeed, brought down, I won't go down that road. I was going to say something really controversial. But yes, they brought down the oppressor government that was tyrannical and making their lives hell. Totally.
I have a radical thought here, too. What if I told you that the inventor of penicillin was racist? Does that away from his accomplishment?
Throw it away. Have
to stop using. Yeah. What if the person who invented coal power plants or the steam engine or plastics was bigoted or sexist? Does that take away from the accomplishment?
Right.
That's exactly my point, William. It's they're taking away from the accomplishment. They have to. The reason they have to is Revolutionary War, destruction. Civil War, destruction. If their thing, as we saw with Vattanza, their virtue, their idea of what is good is destroying the power structure, and these white men who founded this country acted in line with their power, with their idea of what virtue is, which is destruction of the power structure, they have to find some way to invalidate them because it goes against their narrative. And that's what this is. They're trying to find a way to invalidate it because it goes against their narrative. Because the reality of the situation is, if you look at their terms and you hold them to their terms, then you have to look at the Founding Fathers as great as well.
Yeah. And the Founding Fathers, unequivocally, were great. They differed on many things. There was no, you alluded to this at the beginning, Justin, just stating this plainly, there was no single unified Founding Father message that they, I mean, they all signed under the Declaration of Independence and many signed the Constitution, but there were many people who differed about that. They wrote the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers where they disagreed about the meaning of the Constitution they just wrote, for instance. So there was no unified Founding Fathers, and there was lots of debate, but the point is, this is how they moved the ball forward in human history. And they said, and as Thomas Jefferson said, now you move it even further. Every generation has to protect rights. Every generation has to figure out new ways to protect individuals, to secure the blessings of liberty. That's up to every generation. That's not something the founders did and then set it and forget it. They weren't Ron Papil, damn it. The point is, the consent of the governed is what gives the government its legitimacy, and the governed are a new generation all the time and must figure out what that consent means, how it operates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That consent, I've learned, has to be a written contract or recorded. they can't just like do things and assume they have my consent anymore.
That's right. Social contract theory be damned.
All right, gentlemen, what did we learn this trip? Daniel?
I learned that Pusha T is not some horrible slang for something.
William?
I learned that the liquid coming out of my pores recording in this hot room is actually patriarchal residue. So I'm going to go take a shower after this.
What a horrible term. Justin, what did you learn?
I learned that if I were to write a Star Wars movie, it would be pretty awesome.
That's right. We'll just take the plot of the Funko Pop Bruce Willis Tom Brady movie, and we'll just set it in the Star Wars universe, and we'll just add lightsabers. So.
Well, yeah, and in the first scene, C-3PO is crushed, remember? And don't forget the whole thing about Rey joining forces with Kylo Ren. So you put those two movies together, and it's the greatest movie ever made. Fund me! Yeah.
Well, if you have ideas for a Star Wars movie, you can tweet us at The Midside, or Facebook us at The Midside, or social media us anywhere at The Midside. Instagram, Snapchat, Vero. I'd also be interested to know what various female body parts you would rename and what you would rename them. Curious the cleverness of our Midside audience out there. Let us know on all the social medias. You can also go to themidside.com/podcast and listen to all the previous episodes of this show. In case you're missing me in the coming weeks, there are many episodes that feature the horrible tenor tones of my voice, so go back and listen to those. While you're there, you can go to themidside.com/store and pick up a classic logo t-shirt or a False Dichotomy Bro shirt or a Hail Snyder shirt, one I'm wearing today as we record. If you want to get these episodes delivered to you the moment Justin presses publish, you got to subscribe. You can subscribe through Apple Podcasts or on Google Play, either of which you can also leave us a rating. 5 stars, even if you hated the show, thought we're racist, misogynistic a-holes. Just say that, but give us 5 stars. It helps us move up the ladder. We really appreciate all the reviews that have been given to us over the years, and we look forward to more because we're narcissists. So there's that. Thanks to Liberty.me for syndicating us. I think they still do that. Libertarians, booyah. Appreciate you out there. In terms of funding us, as Justin said earlier, not just for movies, but for more podcasts, you can go to patreon.com/themidside, and you can choose to become one of our glorious Patreon subscribers. Patreon subscribers choose to give us a couple bucks every time we produce a piece of content, and that helps us keep the lights on, and there's going to be a few more lights on in my household as the nursery gets lit up in the very near future. So we need that Patreon money. You can give us any amount, and it only gets subtracted from your account when we actually produce something. So I think we're taking next week off, for instance. No Patreon money coming out of your wallets. Yeah, see how that works? That's pretty cool. We really appreciate Patreon subscribers. It does help us do things like pay for hosting and equipment and whatnot and cheesecake or something. I don't know. Whatever we do for the Midside meetups. But if you can't do that, understandable, money is tight in this Trump economy. You can, though, tell a friend. Seriously, though, telling a friend is probably the single greatest thing you can do for this show, because you know other people who are like you, other people who are closet midsiders, to use a phrase, who would like a little bit of refreshing rationality in their discussion of pop culture, politics, and philosophy. Why not send them this way? Tell them to listen to the show or have them on over for a beer. Put the show on in the background and they chuckle to themselves, say, subscribe now, baby. That's right. So thanks so much. I enjoy all this time here with you on the Midside and I will miss it. But I will be back. I will make a triumphant return as soon as my son has graduated from college. So give it a couple weeks. Until then, love you. Bye.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emelznesky reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.
Have a dad.
Cutting this out because I'm going to load the section.
This is the great commentary that live listeners will get that average show listeners won't if they pay $5 more.
That's right.
That's correct. Very good.
Worth it.
I'll say more of this random shit if people start donating on that level of Patreon.